This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
This is Everything Elite, the world's best podcast devoted exclusively to All Elite Wrestling and the Elite Extended Universe. A slightly different episode this week as we look back at the Brody Lee Celebration of Life episode from last night. I'm Aaron, joined as always by my good friend Mike Spears. What's up, Mike?
Hey, everyone. Yeah, this is a very difficult week. And, you know, this is going to be a different episode. So I'm looking forward to talk to y'all for the next hour 15 about this. But yeah, this is kind of a tough, I think is the only word to do that. But how are you holding up, baby?
I'm doing all right. It turned out I was not looking forward to the episode last night. But once it got going, it was like, okay, this is nice in some way, you know, to watch. So we're also joined, of course, by Nate, aka Epitasis. What's up, Nate?
Hello. Hi, guys. I'm here. Mike calling his shot with the episode time there. I like that. Trying to set expectations right off the top that we might run out of things to talk about and just get super awkward and then just decide, okay, we'll see you next week. So, like the smart heads up move by Mike there.
He's a smart guy. We like having Mike. Okay. I mean, I'm going to hit the plugs. Everything AEW is our Twitter. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate's at Epitasis. Mike's at Fuji. Hey, yeah. You can subscribe to the podcast on the app of your choice. Just search Everything Elite. If you use the Apple Podcast app, give us a 5-star rating and review, please. And if you want to support the show, you can do so over at patreon.com/everythingelite. Normally, we do Elite or Delete first. I think we'll just do Elite this week. We'll just talk about some of our favorite things from the show this week. I've got a few listener elites that will bunch in. There's not going to be any ratings talk this week. No ratings came out, so we'll probably get those, what, Monday?
Yeah, Monday. This isn't a thing like last week where we recorded early, we didn't have ratings. It's holiday week, and Nielsen doesn't report on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, so we'll get those, and we'll talk about them next week. But let's get it started with Elite or Elite. Nate, what was something that you enjoyed from the show?
Well, I'd like to select Elite first of those options. just, I think, broadly, overall, you know, we do a lot of, like, quibbling on this show. You know, we have a structure that right at the beginning of every episode is like, hey, let's find something on this show that we can complain about. And, you know, that's kind of necessary for being accountant a lot of the time. So, you know, you can have your quibbles or whatever, but do just kind of want to appreciate the task that the people that made this television show took upon themselves last night. You know, with the recent tragic death of a coworker, they all went and put on a fantastic piece of entertainment that was, as Jericho said at the top of the show, you know, very cathartic, I think, in addition to being, you know, tragic and overwhelming and all these things. And yeah, you know, that goes all the way down the line, you know, crew members, video editing, you know, people sorting out music rights, all that stuff, just came together in a really remarkable way. I think finally, the thing that really kind of pushed it over the top for me was the appearance of Eric Redbeard, aka Eric Rowan, aka Joseph Rude, Mr. He Looks Insane. Just an absolute joy to see him come out. An absolute, a total shock. Really had no expectation that he was going to be there. I thought, hey, you know, they've had no qualms about, you know, featuring unsigned people on their product and so on and so forth. I wouldn't be surprised if they had video messages from, you know, your Matt Cardona's or whoever it may be, or maybe we'll see a video message from Eric Rowan. But did a full-on run-in to even the odds against the Inner Circle, take out Wardlow. And that was just what a really just going the extra mile as this promotion does in a lot of things to not only like make that a meaningful moment, I think, for probably Eric Rowan, but I think also fans who are like, you know, will always associate John Huber, Luke Harper with that tag team. And it's just, you know, kind of, again, cathartic to get some sort of closure or respect paid to that. Also, like, very funny that Eric Rowan has essentially been a meme in our little corner of the internet that watches AEW. And for him to actually appear in this context just put a huge smile on my face. And having him square off with Wardlow was just phenomenal. So I think that was probably the point where it became, and you know, the rest of that match was phenomenal as well. That just really put it over the top and made it, you know, kind of a magical, special thing.
Yeah, and you could tell how much it meant for Joseph Rude to be there. It was something that, you know, I know Aaron and I, we were talking about this yesterday, but this wasn't necessarily a show that I would say is primarily for the viewership. Like, the viewership, it, of course, is a target here, but this was a show really for John Huber's family, a show for his coworkers, a show for his friends. And I felt like that it was incredibly touching. And also in the same way, like, you could, like, it was something that I think across the show, you kind of walked away going like, oh, that, if you're going to be doing a show like that, you did the right thing. And I think like that is kind of my big takeaway from this episode, was that everything, it was like, yeah, of course, the Dark Order are all baby faces, and we'll see how that all kind of uncomfortably will change over time to see if that's going to be something that I think they have to go with going forward. But having someone like that acknowledging the past, like, this is not a company that's ever been afraid of acknowledging people's past and just up and down. And I think the best example of that is having Eric Redbeard, or as much as Jericho wanted to call him Eric Rowan throughout the show, have him out there and have just a little hoss off out there that I don't think any one of us would have ever expected coming. It was just like a nice surprise.
Yeah, it was like, I mean, I giggled when he came out. It was just like very funny. So it's like the one time when I really got to have a huge chuckle on this show. So that was nice. Yeah, you know, they got to bring out his sign and, you know, pay his respects to his friend. Yeah, it was a beautiful moment. So I as much as I just loved typing, he looks insane over and over, which I did. I mean, this is perhaps the lowest of the stakes, but what a payoff for that bit. to see Joseph Rude actually show up on AEW. Just, oh, magical.
You love to see it.
You really do. Mike, was there something particular for you from this show that you really liked?
I mean, I think like the most affecting thing was the Tom Waits video that they put at the end of the show. Other than, you know, obviously things with Brody Lee Jr., -1 and all of that, but just it's something that I know that Chris Mukigana Harrington pointed out, is there's a lot of emotional labor that for doing these kind of shows, and especially for like the people that aren't on camera. I mean, you're someone that, like, you think about like your producers who have been, you know, guiding these segments. You think about the camera people, gaffers, and then the editors. And as an editor myself, I came away going like, that was a real remarkable music video to end the show. And, you know, as I mentioned just briefly before, did not shy away from the fact that I feel like, that in a lot of other scenarios, that it would have been kept to just like clips within the company, clips within that, but they had a lot of just John Huber's life in there. And I felt like that it was beautifully edited, and I felt like that it was just a nice move of making sure that this video won't get taken off because of rights issues, the fact that Tony Khan, Real Billionaire Hours, bought the rights into perpetuity was kind of wild, but it was just a nice way to go out on the show, and it was really kind of fitting. So if I'm picking just one thing, that was a thing that afterwards I've gone back and watched it a couple of times, and it still holds up, and it's still really remarkable, and it's just kind of a special way to end the show.
Yeah, I think probably very nice for, you know, his coworkers in the WWE and stuff, that they had some photos in there to commemorate his time with those people that were important to him. You know, so in however many years, they can go back and pull up the YouTube video and look at that, and, you know, it not all being one promotion, it can be about John Huber's life, like you said. Added the Tom Waits song to my January Americana folk playlist of music that I don't ever typically listen to, so that's a late add. But enjoyed that. Haven't gone back yet. Not haven't gone back to watch anything, just because got to get through this show first.
I'm now, Tony owning the rights to the song now has me imagining like a Fosse cover incoming.
I mean, he must mean that he got the rights in perpetuity for use, like on AEW,
right,
in that
video
package. But it is really funny to think about. No, I bought the publishing rights and the recording rights from the record label in totem. Like I own the song out right now, and I'm gonna use it as my entrance music when I enter at Jacksonville Jaguars games.
I mean, we have seen over the years the controversy of people's music rights between like Paul McCartney, Michael Jackson, and then even nowadays with Taylor Swift. So, you know, who knows? He might find more uses for Tom Waits' old 55. We don't know. But it's just, I assume it's something just to make sure that this thing, they can have it up on YouTube. As great as it would be to hear Jim Ross going, "By God, that's Tony Khan's music," and then this very sad song that now, at least for me, it's now immediately identified with Brody Lee. That's his theme music. Like, that would be insane.
Yeah, I just like the idea of everyone who is affiliated with AEW who does any sort of music, like, gets to do a cover of Old 55. You know, they bring in Leo Rush. He does a cover. I don't know who else does music on in AEW. I've only come up with Fozzy so far, really. So, well, Max Caster, I guess.
Marco,
I don't want to lawyer you too hard, but I do want to a little bit. You can do covers without any rights. There's a compulsory license that as long as you pay people their
seven cents
or 12 cents on the dollar for a cover, you can do it.
I've actually found myself on music TikTok for some reason, and I have learned that there are services. Basically, you can just sign up and say, "Hey, I covered this song," and you pay them like something a year, and they work out all the rights you have to pay to cover. But yeah, that is true.
I have to. I had a minor in music business, and of course, I have no use for it in my real life. So I'm gonna drop one fact on a wrestling podcast about it.
Hey, I got my mileage out of my religious studies minor. So we're just finding uses for like the things that we ended up devoting our time to, thinking that it would matter later on in life.
AB, we'll expect a soliloquy from you later in the show to get that drama degree some use.
I was trying to think about maybe I could talk about the way some scenes are set up, you know, the way people are placed in certain places and what that means, you know. I was in the opening scene with opening scene in the first video we saw of Jon Moxley. And he had his hat pulled down really low, and it was like covering his eyes. But when he would look one way, like one of the eyes would be lit and the other eye was not lit. And I was like, I don't know, is this like some really specific choice that he's making here? Or I don't think so. I think it's just poorly
lit. Happy accident of self taping your memorial promo from home.
Indeed. My choice for kind of my favorite thing, and I tweeted about this, but this was so obvious in a lot of the remembrances of Brody, and certainly in some of the video packages on the show last night. But amazing to me that everyone agreed that it was good that Brody Lee looked at pro wrestling as a job, and he wanted to get out of there as quickly as he possibly could and get home. You know, the story that people told about him always saying, goodbye forever when he left, you know, when it was time to go home, because he wanted his time at home to feel like he was going to be there forever. I think a lot of times when athletes, sometimes just when they retire, but certainly when they die, it's like, oh, all this guy cared about was basketball or baseball or pro wrestling. And then, of course, which we've talked on this show about, the poor history of wrestling children, you know, the children of wrestlers, how they are ignored a lot of times. And so it's heartwarming to see that this was a guy who didn't let wrestling occupy the center of his life. Even though, I mean, I can't imagine that WWE schedule, the way that it monopolizes your time, but he still seemed to find a way to make not just his family, but the people that he loved and cared about central to his life instead. And I think that is refreshing and something that I was just really struck by throughout this whole week.
Yeah, that was really nice. You know, you didn't get a bunch of plaudits. You laud someone by giving them plaudits. Is that right?
Someone could be lauded, but with plaudits.
Someone could be lauded with plaudits.
Yeah,
I'm not sure that makes sense. We might get a. I'm gonna write to the dictionary about that. Well, yeah, but you know, it's not. He was a real grinder. He was on the road, you know, 362 days a year. What a hard worker. It was like, no, you know, this is a guy who loved his family and was a great dad. And I thought it was also very nice that a lot of, if not all of his coworkers, like, seemed to have some familiarity with his family, with his children. It was like, Arn told the story of like, oh yeah, no, you'd look down the hall and there'd be his whole family backstage laughing and enjoying each other's presence. And that was very, very nice to hear. So yeah, I think you're bang on about that.
Yeah, and that's something that I guess we are led to believe will continue on with the Huber family's relationship with AEW. It does seem that, and this was kind of one of the remarkable things over this last week versus, I would say, how wrestler deaths have felt like, at least in my past, where it does seem like there's a concerted effort now not to leave those he left behind, if that makes sense. It does seem like that, at least with how everything felt last night and how everything's been said and how just the general love that you got to see that this promotion has for the Hoobers and Brody's son and Brody's wife, that it does seem like that, if anything that has been learned in 2020, that's kind of a positive note that we could leave the year on. That, like, you could tell how much that the company cared for them. I mean, very much so. This was a show that they made a big deal about Brody Lee Jr. -1, like booking matches and things like that, and they constantly did like this, and just like the amount of relief I would feel like in a way that, and I know I'm kind of rambling here, but just like the feeling of as they're such young kids that like that they don't have the thoughts of, oh, my dad gave his life to this industry and what did that kind of leave us. Like, there was like a very strong feeling of that they're not going to be forgotten, they're not going to be left behind in a way that necessarily hasn't been the case in wrestling, and that was very nice to see. And again, it seemed like there was like a genuine love of this family, and something that I hope that they keep up afterward.
Yeah, there were so many wrestlers who, as you were mentioning, Nate, who talked about like, oh, I was really good friends with Amanda, or I am really good friends with Amanda. It's like, oh, that's so nice that, you know, he was able to mix that. And it's not like Brody is also thought of as like a real ideas guy within pro wrestling. It's not like he came in and punched the clock and, you know, just kind of did what he had to do so he could go home. He was like thought of as a really high level pro wrestler. Plus, he was able to prioritize his family.
Yeah, I mean, you look at all the stories of just like whatever random indie wrestlers, or like Brandon Thurston was like, oh yeah, he just came to my school and put in a bunch of hours teaching my guys just for love of the business because he wanted to help the younger guys. Or like Dalton Castle is like, oh yeah, no, Brody drove me to my first show and wrestled me and, you know, did all these things for me just because he wanted to help the young guys. So it's not like he was, taking short shifts in an effort to get back and focus on himself. He was, by all accounts really doing it all. So
that's, what's been amazing to me is like, just, I mean, obviously we're not getting, I didn't know Brody, don't have a full picture of who he was, but from all accounts, it's like just an amazing, extraordinary person who tried to make everyone feel welcome and everyone feel included. And, was just like exceedingly thoughtful in a way you don't really see, from people, you know, John Silver talked about, oh, he bought me this gear just so I would look better. But then I saw some people just like, you know, random ass people. It's like, oh, I walked into this thing and he just was like, hey, what's up? Like, how are you? And then talk to me. I saw, John from, VOW talk about how they had a random conversation about hockey just because John had on like a hockey hat. So Brody like initiated a conversation with them about it. So it's just like, what a light, you know, a real bummer. I one of the tweets that I really liked was, our buddy, friend of the show, Drama King Matt, who posted that they had, I assume it was on a house show, they had done some match. And after the match, one of the producers said, you did too much for the second match. And Brody looked at him and said, well, don't put us on second next time. I thought that was funny. So I don't know. Just seems like a sweet dude.
My favorite thing was Miro saying Brody loved dogs and had chickens. Like, there were a lot of very sweet posts, and it's something that, of course, in this time that we think of the best of someone, it does seem that he was as close to impeachable as someone can get within the wrestling industry. And, you know, for someone who's been around for this long, that's incredibly remarkable. I mean, to the fact that he did, I know I've brought this up on light, he did 3 tours of Dragon Gate, 36 matches total, and all of them, like all the people that were in the promotion at that time, like were tweeting and talking about like how remarkable of a person he was just through like an 11-month period. And you don't see that often. And I feel like that is something that, you certainly do hope for the best in people. And it does seem like that John Huber was the best of people. And if there's anything that can come from this, it's hoping that his brand of kindness, civility, and just selflessness can continue within this. And that kind of was like the overall tone of the show last night. And I felt like that was beautiful.
Yes. Listener and friend, Oak Gann, his elite pick was that he just said that the show struck the perfect balance between somber outpourings of grief and pure joy, both of which made me cry, which relatable, Oat. And I think that's right. They kind of hit it out of the park with, the videos, the little tributes, and we'll run down the card and I'm sure we'll bring up some of those little tributes that came up. And then just, you know, Joseph Rude coming out and doing a run-in. So it had it all.
Yeah, the Beaver Boys doing the papers. Yep. Just, you know, stuff that was, you know, reminds you of like the silly, just expressions of, I don't know, life that wrestling can be that you don't get in a lot of like more contained forms of media. You know, these shows are like unique to wrestling. You don't get this kind of thing when an actor dies or even when an athlete dies or anything like this. It's like unique to wrestling and a lot to take on at once. But I think definitely strengthen everyone's connection to wrestling because of them. It's like, yeah, no, there's value in what we're all doing here, because look at this wonderful man and look at the beautiful thing that his friends did to honor him. So
we'll talk a little bit more about the wrestling. Tharos our good friend pointed out that he loved how they let guys like John Silver and Ten get pinfalls on this show instead of more established guys. That was pretty fun, and we can talk about that as we go through the card.
Very funny for the commentary to be like, oh, the pressure's really on here because all the other Dark Order members have won. So, yeah. You know, Anna Jay doesn't want to drop this match here and end the streak for her team. And it's like, you know, again, just very funny thing that would only make sense in a wrestling context.
Yeah. and we'll get more into it, but it's something that, like, it's something that they put a lot of these people into positions where I can't comprehend the idea of having to go out there days after a mentor passed away and being put into this position. And I would say, and this is not just me being charitable, everyone knocked it out of the park. Like, it's something that, like, they put these people in these positions. And I mean, they had 10 win the main event, which is something that this is a guy who's been on Dark other than jobbing, and mostly on Dark just does like 3 or 4 minutes, but he was the focus of this match, and that was kind of remarkable that, like, it kind of really kind of like put it like a nice bow on the show. I feel like the idea that they give these people these opportunities, and it's like Silver, Reynolds, Anna Jay, Tay Conti, and Ten, and they just were exceptional.
Yeah, that was something I thought about watching the show, was that I think there is some criticism of AEW with like a lot of former WWE guys on top or whatever. But, and I think there's something to that. You know, there was a recent poster and it's like, oh, it's like all old guys basically. But then you watch this show and it's like bubbling up somewhere is like this huge amount of wrestlers who never really had anything to do with WWE and really weren't widely known properties at all before AEW. So they're, this isn't the point of the show, obviously, but it's just a bright future for this company. It was obvious. It was on display on the show. It kicked off with the Tin Bell salute, of course, and then went right into a John Moxley video that we talked about a little bit. I'm not going to recap the videos, but someone mentioned this, I think, in the Discord, that it was nice to hear from Mox, considering that he's not going to be a guy who does a tweet thread. And he's somebody that we know was close to Brody. So you kind of want to hear from him. And so it was nice to see his video remembrance here.
It's also kind of interesting just to see Moxley speaking at length and like eloquently, but in a genuine, sincere manner, you know, because he always does these sort of promos where he, you know, artfully will bring in some bigger idea, even though he's like, you know, the badass, you know, halfway to garbage wrestler a lot of the time. But it's like, oh no, he uses these larger ideas and metaphors and illustrations in his promos. And he kind of just did the exact same thing here when he was just speaking from the heart about his friend. And I don't know, I just thought that was kind of illuminating about who John Moxley is.
And it's something that, getting into like the videos that like have had very, it's something where you see the humanity there. And I feel like that is one of the emotional things. And even in like this very, very like business where there's supposed to be like a clear delineation between personal and professional and all of that, like you had John Moxley start off the show with talking about a guy that really he's been linked to other than potentially Super Smash Brothers longer than anyone else in this promotion. And you could like feel the heart there, and you feel the heart throughout the entire show.
The wrestling on the show, this was the moment where I was like, okay, we've had this Tim Bell salute, this Mox video. And I was like, are we really they're just going to do wrestling matches after this? It felt I don't know, sudden or something at the time. Although it turned out to be, you know, I think you're right, Mike, when you talk about it's a hard position to put everybody in. But at the same time, I think a lot of people just want to do what they know how to do. Like that's a way to deal with everything that's going on. I think in this first match, we saw that we had the Young Bucks and Colt Cabana defeat Matt Hardy and Private Party. Colt walks out and he is clearly a mess. And then, you know, the match gets going and he seems like Colt again. So that was nice. Of course, he got the pinfall. He pinned Mark Quinn with the Superman pin. After the match, the Acclaimed came out, and I was worried about where this was going, but SCU stopped them pretty quickly, and the Bucks and Colt took them out, and this would set up a match for next week.
Yeah, it was a running theme throughout the show. They're like, no, we want to clearly establish for each segment who the heels are here so that when we have the baby faces get revenge on them, which happened in every single segment, you know, it would be meaningful. So that was something they definitely made a conscious choice to do. And yeah, you know, they definitely had the baby faces get the last laugh and every.
And they did it in a way that I can only speak for myself, but as soon as like I saw the Acclaim come out, I was like, oh, come on, guys, we're not going to be doing like full on storyline angles here. But they did it in a way where the baby faces got the comeuppance. So it was one of the things that's like, yeah, no, like the heels in their nature are going to be do heelish things. But, you know, that's not the tone of the show of having the big brawl that everyone gets beat down at the end and that's it. Like it was just like one of those things that, you know, they had the moments there, keeping in continuity, which I understand why I personally wouldn't have. But it worked out in a way that, you know, was very satisfying.
Then we had a video from Darby Allin. He talked about, you know, how nice Brody was to him. That was interesting. We go from Moxley, where Moxley has known Brody for, you know, forever, for a long time. And then you go to someone like Darby, who has only known Brody from AEW, I believe. And but they, you know, still both have had their moments, you know, with Brody. And of course, Darby talked about wishing that they could have been in the ring together, which I have to agree with. That would have been a very fun match to see. So it was a nice little video from Darby. After that, we had Lance Archer, Evil Uno, and Stu Grayson defeating Eddie Kingston, The Butcher, and The Blade. Lance Archer, of course, was in full Indies Brody slash Luke Harper regalia here. Uno pinned Blade after they hit the fatality. After the match, everybody punched Eddie, and then Jake Roberts, the new Drip King, perhaps, hit him with a thrown clothesline.
Yeah. Let's talk about what Jake Roberts' fit was before we get into the match itself, because if anyone's having like living their best life in quarantine, it does seem to be the wardrobe of Jake Roberts. Just like insane stuff at this point.
Yeah, so they started this match off by having Evil Uno do the big boot to Eddie Kingston while Bryce was checking Eddie's gear, which is exactly the spot that Brody Lee did to Tim Donst with Bryce Rimsburg also checking Tim's gear back in the day. So that's just good to see, you know, that sort of attention to detail. It's kind of maybe a recent phenomenon that like we have all these people on Twitter that watch an obscene amount of professional wrestling and GIF and clip, you know, just tiny little moments from 25 years ago or whatever the case may be. And it's like, you know, I would never have come across that. It's, you know, one of the rare uses of Twitter, maybe, that it's like, oh, hey, here's an illustration of what this is referring to, or hey, here's why this is meaningful. That's just kind of neat.
Yeah, and we also saw Eddie come out in a Notre Dame jersey, and somebody, I think, well, Cubs fan was the one who I saw immediately point out that this was a reference to the fact that Brody would tell people that he played at Notre Dame in the 80s, and Big E had pointed that out in a tweet thread a few days earlier. So that was a reference to that. So yeah, something else I would not have known without Twitter, for sure.
Yeah, it rocked. The fun thing about like the matches on the show and breaking continuity in a lot of ways was Lance Archer and the Super Smash Brothers rock together. Like, this was a like, super fun trios matches where Stu Grayson was like did like that crazy flying move leading into the finish, and just like Lance Archer being like the big hot tag, babyface hot tag, just clearing the ring. And you know, like, this was something that like the vibe of the show was just like, I watched this match and I was like, and especially for like a team like Butcher and Blade, they're upstate New York guys. They would, I know Blade has known Brody pretty much their entire career, but, and that was not another nice thing about the show. This is just us talking about nice things this episode. But Excalibur pointing out like history of like, oh yeah, no, the Blade and Brody Lee had this history dating back to NWA Upstate, and just like all like finding ways without going like just hammering it over the head, but like this like kind of explaining the meaning to viewers who might not have known the meaning of why Butcher and Blade were in this match. You know, I thought like that was really cool.
Yeah, it also just good to see the Smash Brothers like get to get some highlight here, get some spotlight, because they haven't been super featured. Oddly, the Super Smash Brothers kind of, as the Dark Order has you know recovered and got super over, they kind of got less focused than they used to. Like they used to get more time and more matches before the Dark Order started really working. But you know they go out here and of course it's like they don't miss a beat. They just have some of the coolest tandem offense that you'll ever see in a tag team. And you know every time they're out there, the Tony's like, that Stu Grayson is so underrated. It's like, yeah, no, these guys kick ass. So it was good to see that, and it's always fun to see them just do very violent tag team moves and people.
Maybe, who knows? Maybe it worked in their favor to be sidelined a little bit because they definitely struggled when they first came in, and maybe they've been able to get back on their feet through kind of being put in the out of the spotlight for some period of time. But now, yeah, I think it's time to kind of push them back into the spotlight and let them do their thing. That's one of the things that's great about having Excalibur in the company is that he knows a lot of this history and can bring that to the viewer. You know, if you can imagine what a commentary booth of Jim Ross, Tony Schiavone, and Chris Jericho would have done by themselves on this show. So it's very nice to have Excalibur and the little bit he can slide in.
Yeah, and that's something I've shouted out about that's good about AEW in the past. But they and like Mike said, they don't shy away from acknowledging people's past and other promotions or whatever. But it's not just that they reference it, you know, with something like the big boot to open the match here. But like with Excalibur there, it's like, no, actually, that stuff that guys did on the indies, like that actually matters and has some meaning. It's like not just, you know, some guys dicking around in a gym or whatever. It's like, no, that's part of these guys' stories, and we're going to like respect that as we continue to follow their characters through our promotion.
And Excalibur is the perfect person to like be pointing us out things because PWG was kind of the place, I mean, really where Super Smash Brothers broke out outside of Chikara in 2012 to 2014. So it just interweaves itself in a really fitting way. And I don't know how much of that three-man booth, if it did not have Excalibur, boy, I feel for Tony Schiavone in that instant. I would feel really hard there because it's good to have someone there that's able to kind of do the heavy lifting there. And this match, I didn't do like any ratings on this show, but this match probably, with the exception of like the women's tag match, I came away going like, this match was awesome. Like, and I know some people are like adding matches from the show onto like year-end lists, and I totally understand that, but like this was just kind of like a really fun match, and like the person I kind of walked away from this match going like, holy crap, like this person is really great at this kind of thing, is Lance Archer in trios matches rocks. Like, just was an absolute great time.
Yeah, I think that's all true. That really struck me what you said, Nate, about them making what they did on the indies matter. And it's like, maybe that can be a legacy of AEW, that it makes other wrestling important again, you know, because WWE's whole thing has always been, oh, well, he's never done it in the big leagues, kid. And it's like, maybe AEW can knock that out of the discourse of pro wrestling. After this, we had a video with Dax from FTR, Arn Anderson, and Bryce Rimsburg, and basically was just all about what I talked about earlier, about how much Brody loved and cherished his family and didn't let pro wrestling consume his life. This was particularly devastating because Bryce, was crying the entire time he was on camera. So it was a very brutal video to watch.
And Bryce is another person that has had a very tough go, and especially with like independent wrestling and with all of this, like, especially like that was the thing that like watching the show that kind of struck me was for people like Bryce Rimsburg, Eddie Kingston, Chuck Taylor, who have already experienced like incredible loss in wrestling, just even before they really got their names made, is kind of, it was something that, like, you really felt for them. And you could see with, like, Bryce Remsburg, like, his relationship with Brody and the Hoover family, like, it was all kind of, it was really tough to watch, but it was very touching and very beautiful in a way.
Then we had a team of Hangman Page, John Silver, and Alex Reynolds defeat MJF, Santana, and Ortiz. Silver pinned Ortiz after a discus elbow. Before all that, they had a little bit where MJF was kind of antagonizing Brody Jr., who was at ringside throughout the night in his little suit that just killed me as soon as I saw that. And he, the payoff was him hitting the absolute shit out of MJF in the head with a kendo stick. And of course, as we mentioned earlier, Wardlow interfered, but Eric Redbeard himself, Joseph Rude, evened the odds.
Yeah, this was my favorite thing on the show, this whole match. Just like a big sweeping, I mean, John Silver's babyface fire doing a fucking like a Canadian rollover, Canadian destroyer off, you know, by the tip of his ankles. And just getting to show his, you know, Cesaro tot tag prowess and running wild. And, you know, all the guys on commentary marking out for that. Just a great watch. Very fun. One, like the right kind of overbooking where there's 10 things happening at once. And it just takes you on a ride and heightens from one thing to the next thing. And capping it off perfectly with that kendo stick shot. Then you see Brody Jr., who's just smiling from ear to ear. He's already got the pro wrestling facialist because he's got his tongue hanging out of his mouth. Just fantastic.
You also like had stuff that like the way they're like playing off things, kept this in continuity. MJF, after everything, had a Puerto Rican style gear, and he was a part of Santana and Ortiz. It came out the headband, which was kind of playing off like the video and of like last few weeks of that. That it is that MJF is starting to ingratiate himself more into the inner circle, the paper throw to start, and something that I do not believe that that either Chris Jericho or JR knew about the paper thing. They've probably not watched a single BTE in their lives, but playing off of that, and the Cesaro hot tag, Nate, I did not realize until you said it, like, he basically did the whole Cesaro running rough shot, but adding in, like, doing tope con hellos to it. From the apron, it just was an absolute blast. It just was a good time with that, and the look on Brody Jr.'s face after just clocking MJF with the kendo stick, I was like, this is what the show is about. This show is to pop Brody Jr. and to provide solace to his family and friends. And I was like, hey, now this kid, like, regardless, is like, yeah, no, this happened, and that's a story that will stick with him probably, hopefully, the rest of his life.
Somebody pointed out, I think this was on Twitter, that, you know, it's hard to keep in mind, you know, that MJF has just lost his grandfather. Santana just lost his stepfather. So it's just been a really rough go for all these guys. And this seemed, at least felt from my perspective, cathartic, you know, kind of for everybody. But yeah, you tie everything together here. I mean, I hadn't done any of my year-end lists. I mean, other than, you know, what we did on the Patreon, but I haven't, you know, submitted any anywhere. I'll probably throw this one on there because it was, it was exactly what I needed, exactly what I wanted. It just kind of hit all the right notes. So it was nice. Then we got an Eddie Kingston video, you know, and I kind of had the same reaction, Nate, where you talked about the Moxley video of like, this is just how Eddie talks. Like,
yeah.
Eddie's promos are just Eddie. This was the clearest example of that.
Yeah, this was a doozy to put Eddie on right after John Silver and Eric Rowan in the ring. And they were both crying, and you go right to Eddie. That was a 1-2 punch for sure.
It's something that, and this just popped up on Twitter as we're recording one of his quotes. Like, if you remember his teachings, he's never gone, as they named -1 wrestler of the week. That was the quote they gave for him with that. So another nice thing for Brody Lee Jr. and all that. But yeah, no, probably that one of the most heavy promos, or just people to talk or hear talk of recent generations, Eddie Kingston. Like, this is like a 1-2, really like a grand slam of, like, you had Bryce, you had everyone's emotions in this match, Eddie Kingston. You had just the sheer emotion, at least from Anna Jay and the women's tag coming up now.
Yes, thank you for that segue, Mike. It did lead into the women's tag match. Anna Jay and Ty Conti defeated Britt Baker and Penelope Ford. Anna submitted Penelope with the Queen Slayer. After the match, Britt was talking to Tony. She's bringing back up, you know, there's a conspiracy against her. The whole thing is rigged. It's kind of a big rig. A little shout out from Britt. But Thunder Rosa attacked Britt after that. They had a little brawl. But man, this was, I thought, an excellent match.
Yeah, strong match. Jericho walking all over that punchline before Britt could get to it. Yeah, the other Tony also like, hey, wait, Penelope Ford's really good. We don't talk enough about that. Yeah, she's really good. What do you want? Like, yeah, you should have her on Dynamite.
Yeah, and Rebel was excellent as a manager. It's a shame that we live in a world that Taz is so above and beyond the best manager non-wrestler, because Rebel, few things have popped me over like the last few months than Rebel and this Britt Baker act, and her at like trying to like interfere and kind of playing it up as like incompetence in a way was great. And then, you know, the match itself was excellent. I mean, both Anna Jay and Ty Conti have really have, over the cross the year, arguably probably two of the 10 most improved wrestlers. So it was great to see them get prolonged time and this kind of, not to bring up like that point, everyone acquitted themselves quite well in this match, and you know, this was a blast.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to do my whole thing that I normally do.
I tried to like skim it and not I was trying to pull up out of it even as I was going into it.
Yeah, but I will just say that everybody here was really good and looked like they belonged.
I do really like the rehabilitation of Rebel in pro wrestling has been really fun.
Yes. Also, man, this Ty J tag team, it just kicks ass. It's a great tag team. I really enjoy watching them. So it's fun. And Anna Jay, man, she really struggled here just emotionally. And it was just good to see her get a win. And I don't know, it's wrestling. So it's like, it's dumb to say it was good to see her win, but it's like, it was, I don't know. This is like, I think what you were saying, Nate, about like, this can only happen in wrestling. It's like, we're seeing a real person deal with real tragedy,
yeah.
but that's also filtered through like their pro wrestling character. Yeah, it's
they're play acting this fake combat while, you know, but they're also like, they are themselves. It's very weird because, you know, wrestling pretends to exist in the real world and in some ways does exist in the real world. A lot of the characters are the real people, but a fake version of their real people. So it's, yeah, it's just wholly unique to wrestling. It's very bizarre. And it kind of, you know, seeing Anna Jay, the real person out here struggling, you know, and crying about this in the middle of her performance is just unique, and it affects the audience in a way that I don't know that anything else does. But you know, like, everybody went out there and killed it. Like, they were feeling all the emotions, but it didn't, you know, they weren't shying away from having a great match. So yeah, this was another, the hits kept on coming.
Then we had a Chris Jericho video where he strangely decided to tell a story of him not understanding Islam. I was already like, why do you have to bring Saudi Arabia into this, Jericho? And then he tells a story of not understanding the thing inside the hotel room that points toward Mecca and Brody having to explain it to him. And he used this to be like, Brody was maybe the smartest man who ever lived. You know, that was like his perspective on it. Very funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, God bless Chris Jericho. He's had to do a lot of these. Yeah, he made some choices with how he was gonna remember Brody here.
I talked about dogs. You know, he pulled it together at the end talking about dogs, and you know, it's something I forgot who brought up, but like, you think about like Jericho like going through all of this, and of course in 2020 Jericho's way, he has to do just some weird, unnecessary, like, I don't understand the fact that a hotel in Saudi Arabia has an arrow pointing somewhere. Like, come on.
But yeah, I think Chelsea pointed this out in the Discord, and you kind of referred to this in a way.
You're saying okay, I stole it from Chelsea? Is that what you're saying? I'm stealing more points from the Discord patrons?
I just like to shout out our patrons and our Discord friends whenever I get the chance.
It's an ongoing.
But it's like this is a guy who has gone through a lot, has lost a lot of his friends in this business. And so, I don't know, maybe a decent night to just be charitable to Jericho.
Well, we already did the segment, so.
Sure. All right, and then the main event match, we had Brody Jr.'s three favorite wrestlers teaming together, Cody, Orange Cassidy, and Ten, and they defeated Brian Cage, Ricky Starks, and Powerhouse Hobbs of Team Taz. Yeah, as we talked about a little bit, Ten got the win. He pinned Ricky Starks with a spine buster. After the match, Team Taz attacked, including a hook suplex. Our first time seeing Hook do something physical.
No, he did a clothesline on Dark this week.
Okay, well, I didn't watch Dark much this week. Yeah. So.
No, that's entirely fair. But this week, Hook is getting involved. He's getting his hands dirty. Right.
Well, the lights went out, and then we saw Darby walk out a door. And then the lights went out again, and the door opens again, and it's Sting. And they, on commentary, they're like, wait, are they partners? Are they together?
A bunch of do-gooders?
Yes.
Yeah, it was very, I guess they wanted to, and you could tell from the tweet that they tweeted that is, oh, the significance of this is, oh, that Darby and Sting are together now. It's not just that Sting is pointing at him up in the rafters, or they're interested in him. Oh no, they're actually hanging out because they're in the green room together, or they're in catering discussing what they're gonna do later in the show. So it's very funny to do the blackout. Oh, a side door opens. The blackout again. Oh, the same side door opens. Like, you guys could have consolidated, maybe just open the door and walk out together at the same time.
Well, they had to get the snow effects working. They had to get the snow effects working, and they had to have the camera on the snow machine.
Yeah, showing the snow machine. Funny choice. I do love the snow for Sting. Love Ricky Starks sawing the snow every week and, you know, brushing it out of Hook's hair. A big joy. But yeah, very Tony Schiavone yelling, oh, it's snowing in Florida, while they zoom in on the fake snow machine.
I mean, the really important thing was they had to play both songs, you know. So
right, absolutely.
Not to blow smoke up his ass, but the Darby entrance theme is about the best as far as having a big cue at the top to be like, "Hey, this fucking guy is showing up right now." Like it fits him perfectly. It sounds awesome, and it makes sense coming out of the blackout. Sting also one of the better themes in the company, I guess. Do we think that it's like, oh, we don't want people to think that Sting is magical, so let's show them that it's just a snow machine? Is that the thought process, I wonder? But it is funny.
I think that they should they did a rare bad move on this show, because I believe that Sting should be magical, and somehow he's learned the power of generating snow in Duval County, Florida. I think that we should like start treating Sting like he's Poseidon and have control of the weather systems, and maybe Darby gets some sort of control over lightning, fire. I mean, just go through the whole entire Greek just mythic system, and let's start assigning people like their patron deities. Let's go with this. I think that was a misstep. Don't show the machine. We should believe that Sting is Poseidon.
That would really bring a new side to Surfer Sting, I think.
I know. I said Poseidon for a reason. Like Surfer Joker Sting. Like it all lines up here.
That's why I'm Sting, Surfer Gray Surfer, because I control the waves.
Exactly. Sting might be the reincarnation or a child of Poseidon. I'm just putting it out there, and they ruined it by having the camera shot there, because just within 2 minutes, I've just delivered a massive and varied mythos to the character of Sting in the last like 4 weeks. Like we've learned a whole lot here, and they dashed it out by showing the snow machine.
And finally, it would tie together like all of the Sting characters from throughout his career. So I like this idea. I do. They all kind of like team Sting and Team Taz kind of like faced off here. Give me Sting versus Taz is all I really have to say. No reaction to that. Cody's in the ring for the final whatever segment of the night. He brings out Amanda, Brody's wife, and Brody Jr., one of Brody's sons. Nolan, not his other son, was in the 10 bell salute, but not featured as much, I guess, because he's very young. It looks like he's about 2 or 3 or something like that. They placed Brody's boots in the middle of the ring. Cody added a purple bandana. You know, it's kind of the ritual retiring of Brody's boots and his gear here. Tony brought out the TNT title, Tony Khan, that is, and gave it to Brody Jr. And, you know, said that Brody Jr., he named Brody Jr. the TNT champion for life. We found out after the show that AEW will retire that design of the TNT title. He gave him the actual TNT title, and they will debut a new design in the future.
Yeah, just a really nice gesture. Really well done segment. You know, very thoughtful and appropriate. And, you know, amateur wrestlers would retire by leaving their boots in the ring. He leaves his boots here, even down to when Brody won that belt from Cody, he got rid of Cody's version. Was like, you get this old busted one, Cody. I get this new one. And that's when they debuted the new TNT title. So, you know, very fitting to give it to his son, who by all accounts was like sleeping with the belt after he won it. So, yeah, you know, kind of overwhelming, but really, really well done tribute here.
Yeah, and it's something that I think is an object that, of course, is a wrestling title belt, but it's already shown so much meaning for Brody Jr., and it's something tangible that as a child, now as he grows up, like he'll in theory have this title belt for his dad. And then when Nolan, like that's something that like be like, oh yeah, no, this was your dad's like crowning achievement, and it's a part of who we are. And I feel like that was very affecting.
Yeah, this show will live forever, so they'll always have it to go back to. The show ended with the Brody Lee tribute video that we talked about off the top with the Tom Waits 055 scoring the video, featuring they, you know, had a smart way to get around like rights issues on some things where they just had like photos of him with Bray Wyatt or with other people, you know, that he worked with over the years.
I am curious. Do you think they were DMing Bray Wyatt like, hey, can we use your photo in our video? I'm curious about that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
somebody does own those photos.
Somebody does. Yeah, whoever it's whoever took the photo, right? As the owner of the rights of the photo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I don't know enough about like image and likeness or whatever rights to know if Bray Wyatt has a beef if he doesn't like that he was featured. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure no one has any genuine complaints, and I'm sure everyone appreciated it. Like I said, the mechanics of that are interesting. Like, is it the official AEW account that slides in your mentions, or are they just like, oh, everybody's fine with it? I wonder.
Well, a lot of the pictures that they included were ones that I saw people post on Twitter. So I imagine they reached out to those people and said, hey, we'd like to use that photo. The one that had Becky, what's her name? Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch. The one that had Becky Lynch in it.
That's a possible Patreon show where
was that? Is that a Hilaria Baldwin moment?
Yeah. A Hilaria Baldwin
moment. Come on, City Stay.
What we're going to do, Nate, is we're going to throw up photos of various people who have been in WWE in different time periods, and we have to figure out how many Aaron gets. And that'll be a fun game for everyone to play along with at home.
Aaron might do better than me. I had a window of WWE watching, but I think you guys both watched long before I did.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I started watching at like 5 years old and watched it for a long time. I don't know why Becky was just...
Becky Lynch, arguably like... the biggest star that they've had in the last 3 years. Not coming to your brain.
Sorry. I tried.
It
was very touching. I was glad I talked on light, you know, that I mean, I would have liked, I'm not being critical whatsoever of the show, but I did want there to be involvement of people from outside of AEW. You know, I thought that would be nice. And so it was nice that this was the way they could do it. There was also, I mean, all over Twitter, tons of people who currently work for WWE talked about watching the show and how much they enjoyed it. I think it was just nice that everybody felt like they were doing this thing together to honor their friend. And so it was a thing that, and I mentioned this at the top of like, when this show was starting, I was pretty skeptical of it. And I really didn't, I honestly probably wouldn't have watched it if we didn't do this podcast. But by the end, I was like, just didn't want it to end, really. It's like, fuck, when this is over, it's over.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Stranger's like, well, I've seen enough of these that I kind of know the layout and a little bit of what to expect, which is, but I guess I'm thankful. Cause again, like you kind of don't get these. I mean, other, you know, you watch your actors or whatever. You don't also have these weird relationships with the performers like you do in wrestling. So yeah, you know, just kind of thankful that this is something unique to wrestling where you can even get any sort of ceremony or celebration like this. You know, it is cathartic. It kind of just made it easier for me to stop, you know, going down the timeline. And it's like, oh shit, here's another dozen stories about a nice thing this guy did. Yeah, it just kind of makes it more of a communal release. And that's, I think, can be uplifting and healthy.
Right. And it's something that I feel like in a lot of ways, this was like one of these first big shows for this generation in this regard. And with how wrestling fandom and like wrestling content and like the relationship, the parasocial relationship between the fan, the consumer, and the wrestler has drastically changed over the last decade, this felt more of a communal experience than I would say any of like the previous like wrestler memorial, like celebration of life shows that I remember seeing like while growing up and watching wrestling. So it's the communality of this, I think, is the real remarkable thing coming out of this. And it seemed like, and seeing like the clips after the show, that, you know, the primary audience, in my opinion, being the Huber family, it seemed like that this was a really important moment for it. And, you know, Brody Jr. clocking all of the Dark Order with kendo sticks afterwards. And you could tell like that this was a moment that, you know, it's not going to be something that is going to look back with sadness, of course, but it's not going to be looked at with anger. Instead, looked at it as like a special moment that was solemn. It was sad. It was maudlin at times, but, you know, at the end was very beautiful.
Yes, that was the AEW celebration of life for Brody Lee. I'm not going to do the full Patreon plug that I usually do. I'll just say Mike and I tried to do a show on Saturday for, you know, we usually put out shows on Monday. Because of the holidays, Saturday was really the only chance we had to record. And in the middle of recording, we found out that Brody had passed. And neither of us really felt like finishing the show. And we didn't feel like what we'd recorded really was appropriate to the tone of the day. So we bend that. Unfortunately, you know, it's right up against the end of the month, so we weren't able to do something extra. But, you know, we'll be back next month with plenty of content. So you can check that out at patreon.com/everythingelite. Okay. Next week, basically they've taken everything that was going to be on the show this week and moved it over to next week. They're still going to do the two nights of New Year's Smash, but it'll be, you know, the 6th and the 13th. Snoop Dogg is going to be on the show of the Go Big Show. Of course, that Snoop Dogg, if you were confused. Here's what we know for that show. I don't know if this is going to be taped or if it's going to be live.
No indication whatsoever. Yeah.
So we'll have the men's world title match, Kenny Omega versus Fenix. The women's world title, Hikaru Shida versus Abaddon. The Bucks and SCU versus the Acclaimed and the Hybrid 2, Jake Hager versus Wardlow, Cody Rhodes versus Matt Sydal, and Chris Jericho will be on commentary for the show. And we found out a bunch of matches for the 113 show also, but we'll talk about that when it gets closer to that show. So anything else you guys want to talk about before we get out of here?
Happy New Year!
Yeah.
Happy New Year, indeed.
What's on your queue, Aaron? I know you and Sarah tend to do a movie marathon for New Year's.
We do. We haven't planned anything. Jason Isbell is doing a live stream. I'll probably watch that tonight. I think that's at 8 or 9, but Central Time, so that fucks me up. So I'm not sure when it actually starts.
You're 1 hour ahead.
Yeah, literally the way I can figure out Central Time is I remember watching like television as a kid, and it'd be like blah 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 at 8:07 Central, and I have to say that in my head. Like I'm like, okay, 5:54 Central. Like that's the way I have to do it. So I'm very dumb when it comes to time.
It seems like that there's a lot of artists kind of taking advantage of that, because I have a live stream I'm watching tomorrow that they're doing. One of my favorite acts, Tycho, usually does like, he goes to Burning Man and does a set, but he's like, I'm going to do that on New Year's Day, like a sunrise kind of set that, you know, I've seen that. And then, of course, our friend of the show, Murder Brian, had a really fun stream a couple of days ago. So we're not at a lack of content here for New Year's weekend. So, Nate, do you have anything that you're planning on watching or playing on over the New Year's weekend?
No, my big live stream got delayed a month. I did get that little bottle of Polish vodka that I was sipping on. So those are my New Year's plans, is basically that weird orange Polish vodka. And I'm probably going to play Destiny, I think. Feels like a Destiny kind of day. That's all. That's all I think I got going on.
Just watching the new ray tracing on the PS5.
Yeah, I might have acquired an Xbox Series X. I did previously talk about having a problem on this show. So I'm actually playing it on that because it's free on Game Pass.
Oh, well, there you go.
Do you have any 2020 movies to recommend if we throw some on tonight or tomorrow?
Oh, is it only 2020? Is that the gimmick?
Yes.
Is that the rule?
That makes it tough.
It does.
I don't know if you've heard about this Wonder Woman 1984, but everybody is abuzz about it, just saying that it's really great and short, and the politics are really good. So that's a candidate for you.
If there's anything I love, it's any way I can support the IDF.
Yeah. So that's one. If you're really into magical lassos.
Yeah, things vaguely being in the 80s, but doesn't seem like it's really in the 80s. Reagan, you know, has all the hits there. And if you're on that Max Life, I mean, there's a whole world to you if you go to HBO.
I'm all about that Max Life.
Well, there we go.
You guys didn't come up with anything?
No, nothing came out in 2020. The theaters were like closed. You could watch Tenet, yeah. I guess.
Tenet? Did Tenet ever come out, actually?
It's streaming, yeah.
I watched Borat, the new Borat movie. That's a movie, yeah. I know I watched
this year.
I already
saw that.
Yeah. I have like a lot of documentaries that I watched this year, but I don't know necessarily if they're from 2020.
Yeah, I got another for you.
Heaven's Gate. That's a documentary from 2020. That's a wild series. Gets you in a real good mood into
series,
the year.
Mike, this is a movie marathon.
I mean, it's 4 episodes. It's
That's not a movie.
Yeah, it is. Thank you. Like 4 hours.
Also, not a movie. Twin Peaks: The Return. That is not a movie. Internet.
I mean,
I don't know anything about that, so I don't have an opinion.
You know,
tell me why.
You know
not
that
a movie.
Fucking obnoxious. It's a television show. I'm
familiar with Twin Peaks.
Yeah, you know that obnoxious best movie ever poll that people were doing for like, I don't know, 18 months. Have you seen this?
Yes.
Some guy did a bracket of best movie ever with like, I don't know, 128 movies or 516 movies or something ridiculous. So from time to time, people were retweeted like, oh, this is a travesty that fucking Sleepaway Camp is losing to The Craft. I don't know. And retweeted into your feed. And like Twin Peaks: The Return, the television series on Showtime, was like in the top 4 of the best movie of all time. It's not a fucking movie. It's a television show. It started as a television show. It really drives me insane.
Have to agree with you. I'm scrolling some best of 2020 movie lists, and frankly, I don't recognize mostly or almost all of them. But I see, I don't know, was the Harley Quinn movie any good? That's on here.
I gave it like 3 stars. It was fine. I'm a little annoyed. I'm getting all my complaints out at the end of the show because I saved them all during the show. Good. I'm a little annoyed that people, it's some level of contrarianism where they're like, oh, you know, the DC movies are so raw and, you know, exactly the good kind of stupid comic book shit. No, it's just the same slop as the Marvel movies. It's just like less popular. So a certain person is drawn to it. Like I think they're probably less functional movies. They certainly fail to meet the intent, which is to be like successful in a way that the Marvel movies are, which they don't succeed at. So they're less functional as far as the purpose of a blockbuster movie, which is not to make art, but to, you know, pop a giant box office rating. But then, I don't know, there's some level of irony poisoning where it's like, yeah, actually the DC movies are good when they're just like the same. So it's fine. It's a fine movie. I think we talked about maybe on the Patreon, I was annoyed that they just made Gotham Los Angeles in that movie.
Yeah.
I was just like, okay, Gotham's like, we did New York as Gotham, Chicago as Gotham, Pittsburgh as Gotham. Now Los Angeles is Gotham. Why not? Who gives a fuck?
Really looking forward to when they decide to make New Orleans Gotham.
New Orleans Gotham would be interesting, maybe.
Miami Gotham?
Is Blade from New Orleans? Is that where Blade is from?
I want to say he's from New Orleans. I'm not certain of that. Don't at me, but I want to say he's from New Orleans.
Okay, yeah, that's official now. Blade's from New Orleans. except in the Blade movie, of course, he's like in some weird European brutalist Gotham. It's not New Orleans at all. It's honestly, it's worth a watch, I guess, is what I would say. There's a good ode to the Breakfast Sandwich. What were we talking about? Birds of Prey, the Harley Quinn movie.
That's right.
Mostly a call to like Murder Brian, who's like, yeah, Birds of Prey was really good. It's like, yeah, it was better than all the other terrible DC movies. All the other DC movies were just, you know, less successful versions of the Marvel slop. I didn't prepare a rant, but this is the angry comic book nerd portion of this program.
What about the Bill and Ted movie?
That was fine. I was more generous to it than it probably deserved because I really like Bill and Ted.
The idea of the Bentley New Year's Eve movie marathon is mostly like lighthearted movies.
Yeah,
like,
well, both of those are definitely lighthearted. So, yeah, I mean, again, I'm being overly critical of these, but these are exactly the kind of movies that I'm like, I want to just sit down and fucking watch something, and they're exactly what I go to. So, yeah, they certainly fit in that regard. Bill and Ted, kind of a very 2020 movie in that it's more about Bill and Ted's daughters than it is about them. And I don't know, didn't really have any jokes, basically a no jokes movie, but kind of sweet, kind of cute. Jokes. Gotta be something I can recommend to you. I don't know that there is, not for 2020.
What about the Bad Boys movie?
I did not see that. I don't think I've ever seen a Bad Boys movie.
Really? As a kid?
Kind of surprised.
No, yeah, don't doesn't come to mind.
Hmm. All right, well, nothing is really jumping out on these 2020 lists.
If you want 2020, if you're going to restrict this to 2020, you kind of have to go like deep art house or something.
Mhm.
Yeah, that's really not it's just not the idea of the night.
There was a documentary in October, I think, that was pretty good. It's called Blackpink Light Up the Sky.
I've seen that.
Oh, okay.
That's what I actually watched.
Dun, dun, dun.
I think we're out of luck, really, for 2020 movie.
I think you just have to watch a documentary series about the Heaven's Gate cult.
I'm not watching any fucking series.
All right there. All right there, Giamatti.
All right. Well, I think that's a sufficient episode.
Okay. Yeah, I'm glad we could not solve anything for you here.
Just like life.
Hopefully
just like
I made
life,
some people
nothing
mad,
is solved.
I guess.
I'm sure it did. Okay. Well, thanks everybody for listening. We'll be back next week. That's it. Bye.